Professional wrestling is a wonderful ride, and this past weekend has inspired me to create the very first episode of Freebird Rules. This is your host, Matt Freights, and we're getting into WrestleMania and a whole lot more on this first episode of Freebird Rules.
Yeah. Let's go. We just gotta go hard.
Welcome to Freebird Rules, everybody. My name is Matt Freights. They also call me the Iceman in the podcasting space, and I'm going to be your host in what is a brand new professional wrestling podcast, one of many, I'm sure. There are a ton of professional wrestling podcasts out there. However, I decided after this past weekend that I needed to do something because I have been watching professional wrestling a long time. I've also been podcasting now since 2020. I have a show called The Iceman and Coach Sports Show, in which I do a lot of sports commentary with my friend Brad. I also have a sneaker podcast called Fire Footwear Sneaker Podcast. And if you look at my background here, you might be able to see some sneakers. And professional wrestling has been something I've been into since around 1990. I can remember being, 5 or 6 years old, and my parents letting me rent the VHS of the Survivor Series 1989. So two things obviously are dating me here. The first thing that's dating me is 1989. And the second thing that is dating me is going to a video store and renting a VHS. They don't exist anymore. I think there is one ironic Blockbuster out in Oregon somewhere. But professional wrestling has been a part of my life. I'm now 41 years old for, 35 years or so? And this past weekend was WrestleMania weekend. And it's funny because it sort of reinvigorated my love for wrestling. Now, I should tell you that I am a WWE product in the sense that it's really the only promotion that I focus on. I understand that there are a lot of other promotions like AEW, Ring of Honor, New Japan, but I don't spend a lot of time focusing on them. I actually don't even really read about them. WWE is the product that I've been watching since I was a kid. It's the product that I choose to watch through thick and through thin. And so for this podcast, I'm going to be doing a lot of talking about results from WWE, backstage drama, going through the past. And every so often, we will touch on AEW. Obviously, with this past week, you had the airing of the tape from All Out and the commentary from the Young Bucks and all that stuff. And those are some things that we will get to at some point as a part of this podcast as they come up. But I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of every single Dynamite, every single Collision. We are going to talk on a weekly basis, hopefully, about Raw, SmackDown, and any of the live pay-per-views or PLEs that they call them now. And so that's kind of where I started here, is that this past weekend really jump-started my love for it. I love podcasting. I love the oral medium. And I think that it's right. So this show is not only going to be a podcast, it's going to be on a YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this in audio, you found this for the first time, please go to Freebird Rules. That is our YouTube channel. Hit subscribe if you want to see the video. And I think that this is going to be an absolutely wonderful ride, and I'm very, very excited to have everybody on it. So like I said, I'm focused in WWE. Every single week I don't watch live because, quite frankly, there's way too many commercials. Thankfully, now in the on-demand world, we're able to go and watch all of this on demand, and I can kind of fast forward and get some highlights. I also really enjoy reading Cage Side Seats because I think they not only give a good synopsis, but I think that they provide a ton of context into the storylines that are happening, why things are awesome, and it gives me something to go to and really focus on each and every week. And I feel like in today's wrestling world, there is a ton of tribalism, or I guess you could say negativity, because if you go on Twitter, you go on social media of any kind, you see a lot of people being in the AEW camp or the WWE camp. And in my opinion, the more professional wrestling that there is, I feel like the better we all are as fans, because professional wrestling, as I said in the open, is a wild ride, but it's a wonderful ride. There's nothing quite like it. I've not been able to describe why I love professional wrestling so much to somebody who doesn't watch it, somebody who thinks it's stupid, somebody who thinks it's fake. There's just something about it. It's a male soap opera, a male-driven soap opera. And yes, there are female wrestlers. There are female fans, always. But I think predominantly it has been a male-dominated sport or a male-dominated entertainment piece. A lot of people would say it's not a sport. It's athletic, but really, it's drama television. And when done correctly and done right, maybe correctly isn't the right word, but done right, there's really nothing like it. The payoff that you get on an emotional level, there is nothing like it. And so this past weekend, again, it inspired me. It inspired me to want to talk about it. It inspired me to want to go and watch videos of the past and talk about those things. It inspired me to want to talk about this with other people that I know who like professional wrestling, which is not a lot. But I know, very similar to sneakers, that there are a lot of people out there who are passionate about professional wrestling, but maybe they don't talk about it, or maybe they don't have somebody that they can really dive deep into it. And so I want to start off talking about WrestleMania 40. So this is 40 years of WrestleMania. A lot of things have changed since the first WrestleMania. Obviously, the first one, I believe it was on closed circuit television. And now you have a two-night spectacle, an extravaganza, if you will. And what started at Madison Square Garden now takes place at football arenas. So we're talking mass amounts of people, tons of interest. Obviously, it's now on demand. You can go watch it after the fact. No more pay-per-view. You have subscription models and things like this. But WrestleMania in and of itself has woven itself into the fabric of pop culture. It's woven itself into the fabric of just everything now. It's talked about on ESPN. It's now, as a part of TKO, owned and partially owned by UFC. So something that is a real sport and something that is a premeditated sport or a drama, if you will, is now together with something that is considered legitimate. And I think all that's awesome. And so night one really sets the stage for night two in a lot of ways, because one of the things I believe that having a two-night series allows you to do is create some suspense heading into night two, depending on what the storylines are. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is the arena. So this happened at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. I have no shade against the city of Philadelphia. It's a great wrestling town, absolutely wonderful wrestling town. The stadium is nice. The area over by it is really nice. I've been to Citizens Bank Park quite a few times. I just don't like, or I prefer, closed roof WrestleManias. There's something different about it. The feel is a little bit different. The look is a little bit different. And I feel like the outdoor ones are fine. They just don't have the same panache as you would get inside. I feel like the pyros can be a little bit better in terms of what they can do, but I just feel like something just lacks. The graphics don't hit as well. The stage doesn't seem to look the same. There's something about it that I just like better indoors. It feels more of a spectacle to me indoors. And so that's obviously at the forefront here for me, because a lot of people were cold on night one. I think the wind chill was somewhere in the mid-40s. That's cold. It's objectively cold no matter what sport you're watching. And obviously for the wrestlers in the ring, that may change some things a little bit. But I think one of the things about professional wrestling that has always been true is that the crowd drives a lot of what people perceive to be great. And so night one had a lot of great matches on paper. There was a lot of matches, or some matches, that were adding suspense in for night two. And I think the crowd overall was fine, but I think being that cold lends itself to not getting the kinds of reactions that you would expect on something at a WrestleMania level. So let's start off, first of all, with the stage. I really like the XL. I like celebrating 40 years. One of the things Vince McMahon tried to get away from was making WrestleMania seem old. Folks, it's old. 40 years. 40 years is objectively old, no matter how you look at it. Something that has been around that long is old, but in a good way. It means that it has staying power. It means that it's something that people have wanted to watch, people have wanted to see. And I think that's awesome. I think that's amazing. And so seeing the XL, the green, everything, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was fine. I thought the stage was great. I went to WrestleMania 35 and was extremely disappointed in the fact that the stage was just a giant jumbotron or a giant screen. To me, that lacked ingenuity. It lacked any sort of creativity. And that was really disappointing. So starting the whole proceedings off is Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch. And these are two women who have absolutely killed it over the past couple of years. Becky Lynch is established. I was there when she won the Universal Women's Championship over Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair. First time the women had ever headlined a WrestleMania. And while the finish was weird, that established her as a main player in professional wrestling, hands down. And so Becky Lynch, in my opinion, really doesn't have anything to prove. And coming into this match, I was kind of intrigued because Rhea Ripley, after winning the title at WrestleMania 39, has been on this just massive run. To me, she is the main character of Monday Night Raw. She's very clearly the leader of the Judgment Day. And heading into this match, I was a little bit nervous because, in my opinion, nowadays, it takes a lot to get somebody to that star level. And I think that you need to keep it that way. In times past, the championship belts collectively have been swapped so often that they seem illegitimate, in my opinion. And so here you have Rhea Ripley coming up on 1 year after the epic match that she had to win the title. Here comes Becky Lynch, somebody who they are selling as needing to prove to herself that she is still the man. But I think to the crowd, Becky Lynch is almost untouchable. She's almost Teflon. I really feel like she can do no wrong. And so I was a little bit nervous, though, that WWE was going to pull the trigger and make Becky champion again because maybe there was some perceived need to have somebody who was established the way that she was. The match was great. I thought that she did a wonderful job. I'm talking about Becky of selling the narrative that she came in with. Rhea Ripley is just a superstar. And I'm so glad that she got this win. I'm so glad that they treated her that way with her entrance. Both entrances were fire. But Rhea Ripley deserved this win. And I feel like whenever somebody knocks her off, it should feel very similar to whoever beats Roman Reigns. And I just don't think that's Becky Lynch. I feel like there are a lot of women on the roster right now that have a ton of talent, ton of upside, Liv Morgan being one of them. And I thought that this was the right decision. So I was really happy with that. Following that, you, of course, had the tag ladder match. And at WrestleMania, tag ladder matches are always going to be fun. They're a spot fest normally. But I think a lot of times they lack any sort of story. And coming into this match, there were some things that were interesting to me. The one that was most interesting to me was R-Truth and, of course, The Miz. And you have the Awesome Truth. That's a callback to way, way, way back. And R-Truth is a guy, in my opinion, who has been doing so much for WWE for so long and really hasn't had a lot of payoff. I believe he faced John Cena for the title at Capital Punishment way back in 2011, I think. And that was here in my hometown of D.C. And that's about it. He's been a comic relief guy, but a solid guy, solid worker. Just an awesome locker room guy. And one of the other narratives heading into this was that they were finally going to split the tag titles from one brand to the other. So SmackDown was going to get theirs, Raw was going to get theirs. And so you're going to have two winners here on the night. And R-Truth winning with The Miz really was the high point. And that's what I took away from the match. Obviously, the spots are fine. They're a lot of fun. I think Austin Theory and his partner, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but really it didn't matter. Like, whoever won besides R-Truth to me didn't matter. And yes, of course, it matters to them. It matters to their career. But it was just a nice feel-good moment for R-Truth, somebody who gets a WrestleMania moment because I don't think he's had one up until this point. And that's one of the refreshing parts of this new paradigm of WWE. So I really enjoyed that. Of course, then you have the Kelsey sighting, Jason Kelsey sighting, and that's fine. Jason Kelsey obviously is a name. His brother is dating Taylor Swift. That match to me was fine. It was filler in my opinion. I don't really feel a certain way about Rey Mysterio anymore, feel a certain way about LWO anymore. It was just an excuse to get Jason Kelsey out there and Lane Johnson. Pop for the Philly crowd. Jason Kelsey is a madman, takes his shirt off. Everything's fine. It's just fun. That's all that you really need sometimes. Kind of like Johnny Knoxville beating up Sami Zayn a couple of years ago. It's just fun. That's all. And then you had Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso. Easily the most disappointing match of the night, possibly even of the entire card over the span of 2 days. And why? Well, these two have been through it all together. Obviously, they are unprecedented in their tag team prowess. They're going to be Hall of Famers, no doubt. One of the best tag teams to ever do it. Not the best tag team to ever do it, but certainly one of them. And everything that happened with the Bloodline, everything that got to where they are today, where Jimmy had to leave the brand, finally establish himself as a main eventer. And this, to me, was supposed to be a blood feud. I never really liked the build all that much because I thought they were leaving something on the table. And this is WrestleMania. In my opinion, it's a place to finish feuds, not necessarily start them. I mean, you certainly can. But for a match of this magnitude, I would have hoped that it would have been better. They didn't get a ton of time. They were selling a more dramatic story. I felt like it should have been a lot more brutality. I feel like it didn't really make either guy look great. And I think the intent was that there's going to be something else down the road. At least I hope there's something else down the road because this was just not it, in my opinion. So that was a very big disappointment for me. And again, with the creative team, I'm willing to give them a pass and trust the process because I think that they have earned that to this point. And then, of course, you had the six-woman tag team match. And to me, the star of that was Jade Cargill. This was obviously a way for her to get a very early WrestleMania moment. But what stood out to me is seeing Bianca Belair, Naomi, Jade Cargill all celebrating in the middle of the ring. Three black women in WWE. Not that there hasn't been representation in professional wrestling before, but my goodness, has there been, I don't want to say problematic ways in which these black people have been treated in WWE. Look at Kofi Kingston, has that great moment at WrestleMania 35, loses to Brock Lesnar on the very first SmackDown on Fox in, what, 25 seconds? And I feel like this was a great moment for anybody looking and watching to think, if I look like them, then I can be this great and I can do great things. And I thought that that was something that I loved. What was clearly, in my opinion, the match of the night was Sami Zayn versus Gunther. Of course, coming in, you have Gunther with 666-day Intercontinental Championship reign, longest ever, arguably the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, certainly in how long he carried it, but I think he defended it well. He had a title reign. I love boxing. One of the things we say is a champion should have a reign. They should be defending it as often as possible and defending their right to be champion. And Sami Zayn, of course, coming in, all the stuff with Chad Gable, all the Rocky IV references. I mean, all that's fine. Rocky in Philadelphia, it all makes sense. And the match really, it hit a lot of great notes, obviously. And Sami Zayn, in my opinion, very similar to R-Truth, has done just great work for WWE. And this is now two WrestleManias in a row, in my opinion, that Sami Zayn has had a wonderful moment. Last year, winning the tag titles with Kevin Owens as part of the Bloodline after coming up short for the Universal Championship against Roman Reigns. And then, of course, you have this moment here where he becomes Intercontinental Champion. And Gunther, over the course of the last two-plus years, added legitimacy to a belt that used to mean something. When I think of the Intercontinental Champion, I think of Mr. Perfect. I think of Bret Hart. I think of guys like that. It was an ascension for them. When they got to that level, it meant that they were destined for great things. And the Intercontinental Championship has had prestige its entire life. And I feel like over the years, it has become secondary to the point that it has become diluted. And Gunther made it matter. And so I thought it was an awesome moment for Sami Zayn. Obviously, him seeing his friends on the way out into Gorilla and seeing his family was awesome. That's the kind of thing you want to see. So I really love that. I thought that was the match of the night. I love the callback to one of his moves with the brainbuster on the turnbuckle. But that was fantastic. And then we get to the main event of night one. And the main event of night one is tagged as the greatest tag team match of all time. And WWE loves to do this. Remember, we were supposed to get a once-in-a-lifetime match between Cena and The Rock, and we got it twice. So this is just WWE hyping themselves up, hyping the matchup, as they should. So coming into this match, the stipulation was if Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes teaming up defeated The Rock and Roman Reigns, then Cody Rhodes would have a straight one-on-one match with Roman Reigns on night two. And obviously, if the opposite happened, Bloodline rules, no holds barred, no disqualification and everything. The entrances took, I think, like 22 minutes. And of course, they're going to give The Rock the time for that because he's The Rock. And Roman Reigns should get a long entrance. He's been the champion for, I think it was like 1,316 days. Just absolutely fantastic. And Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, awesome, workmanlike. They are great champions. They're great competitors. They're great representatives of the brand, in my opinion. And so this match, I think, went almost 45 minutes without entrances. They booked it really, really well. The Rock obviously hadn't been in the ring, they claim, since 2016, but that was like a 40-second squash, I think, against the Wyatt family. It had been, I think, since 2013, since he'd been really in the ring. And I think that was, at least at WrestleMania, and that was against John Cena, where I think he tore his oblique. And The Rock needed a match booked for him that was going to play to his strengths. And I think that this match did that pretty well. Obviously, Roman Reigns doesn't wrestle two nights in a row very often. But The Rock, I think, looked good. He's a great heel. He just has so much charisma. And I was watching this and said to my wife, The Rock just gets it. There's just something about The Rock where he gets it. And this match kind of played to all of those things. There was a lot of great callbacks. I thought it was great the way The Rock was talking with Cody Rhodes' mom. I thought that was terrific. They obviously had Seth and the knee and all the injuries. And just everything worked. Roman Reigns spearing The Rock, I thought that was terrific. The pedigree spot I thought was awesome too. A lot of things that kind of had you popping, but the one thing that lacked was the crowd because it was at the end of a long night, and of course the weather really was a factor. But in the end, I thought that they had a few finishes in which they could go, or a few places in which they could go to set up for night two. And ultimately they went with The Rock pinning Cody Rhodes in the middle of the ring, 1-2-3, after a people's elbow and a rock bottom. And it set up a lot of intrigue for night two, because anything goes in night two. And so I thought it was done really, really well. I thought that it was entertaining. I know a lot of people thought it was slow, but the thing is it had a lot in there, and it built up to that. We had brawling in the crowd, coming back to the ring, all the trash talking, hitting with the weight belt, the pedigree spot, everything, the spear. A lot of things in this match at the time probably felt like, oh, there's too much here. But it sets up for things down the road. And I think that's one thing that WWE Creative has done a great job of recently, is they're thinking ahead. Long gone, at least, are the days of Vince McMahon so far, where we're making changes night of. An event of this magnitude should be locked in, and we should know what we're doing. And what happens on a night like this should feed into plans that we know are going to happen for at least 6 to 12 months down the road. And I think that this match 100% did that. And if you haven't watched it, you should, because I think it was actually a really good showcase for The Rock, really good showcase for Roman Reigns. And it was a great example of creating drama and setting up tension for what is now a two-night extravaganza. So overall, night one was fine. A lot more filler during night one. But of course, Rey and Becky tears the house down. Sami Zayn and Gunther tells a great story. And of course, the tag match at the end sets us up for drama in night two. So hard to complain. And now we head into night two, of course. So one of the things that the tag match set up, in my opinion, was what was Seth Rollins going to do? The next day, he had to face Drew McIntyre for the World Heavyweight Championship. And the buildup to that was that Seth cared more about the bloodline than he did about Drew McIntyre. And he put his body on the line in that tag match. And you know what happened? Everything that Drew said would happen, happened. Drew basically, I don't want to say squashed him, but pretty much dominated the entire time. I love the Claymore right from the start. Very smart psychology from Drew McIntyre. We're going to go for the jugular right away because, number one, it was a callback, in my opinion, to Daniel Bryan losing in 12 seconds to Sheamus at WrestleMania 28, something like that. And then, of course, you had the whole buildup to this was, hey, Seth Rollins is in bad shape. I'm going to go for the win right away. And Seth Rollins was a fighting champion, did everything he could, but Drew McIntyre gets his moment in front of actual fans. And for a split second, I really enjoyed it. I really thought that this is a great moment for Drew. And as soon as he went out of the ring and started creeping toward the announce table, I knew something was afoot. CM Punk is on commentary here. We know that he's hurt, but they've been kind of jawing at each other for a while. And Drew McIntyre does what all great heels do, is he lets his hubris get in the way. And he starts jawing at CM Punk, who's talking back to him. Eventually, he crosses the line. CM Punk attacks him. And guess who comes out? Senior Money in the Bank, Damian Priest. And he has had a lot of failed cash-ins or a lot of failed cash-in attempts up until this point. Kind of delegitimized the briefcase to an extent. But here he comes, perfect moment, does his finisher. 1-2-3, new World Heavyweight Champion. And this is great because obviously it crowns a new guy who 100% deserves it. And now you're building to another feud with Drew McIntyre, CM Punk. So many great things about it. I just thought it was terrific. All of it was done really, really well. And again, it's refreshing. It's refreshing to see guys who are now at the top of the card or near the top of the card who wouldn't have gotten that kind of a chance under Vince McMahon. And then we moved to what I considered a filler part of the evening with the Philadelphia Street Fight. A couple things that came out of that for me, obviously seeing Bubba Ray Dudley is a great nostalgia pop. And obviously you're going to get all the Dudley Boys things. Karrion Kross, to me, I really wish he would get a push, because he seems like a guy who just can't get over that hump. And I'm not really sure why. He's got a great look, a great gimmick, and he was just fodder for all the nostalgia stuff. It was fine for what it was. And the Street Profits, Bobby Lashley, obviously win, and that's fine. And Bubba Ray Dudley, all that cool stuff is fine. LA Knight and AJ Styles was a match I was kind of looking forward to, because I do love some LA Knight. I love AJ Styles. And LA Knight getting what I consider to be his WrestleMania moment with a guy who, quite frankly, is perfect for him, because AJ Styles can work a match against just about anybody. And what I know is that LA Knight is still over, and he's over with the fans really, really heavily. I just wonder now, at his age and with where things have been set up so far, is he going to be able to get his chance? I'm not sure. Is he going to sort of be left on the outside looking in, because there are just a lot of great guys right now? Creative can only give so many guys a push. And now you have a new Intercontinental Champion. You have a new World Heavyweight Champion. And we're getting to the main event here pretty soon. So is he going to fit in anywhere in the championship space? And that's going to be the hardest part for him. AJ Styles, though, always brings it, and he's probably toward the end of his career, but I really look forward to how he's going to end that career, what kind of a swan song he's going to have going forward, because he's just one of the greatest workers of all time. I think he's awesome, and he was terrific here. I felt like this match, though, needed a little bit of brutality with the way that the feud set up. Going to jail, brawling just about everywhere, brawling at WWE World right before the event, all that stuff, and we didn't see, to me, enough brutality. Again, it's WrestleMania, so perhaps there are some things down the road, like a Hell in a Cell, and you may see it blow off there. But I think the right man won in the end, and you just want to know what's next for LA Knight. Logan Paul retains his U.S. Championship against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. And Logan Paul, folks, as much as I hate to say it, he's a star. He's a legitimate athletic freak. He's a star. He gets the business. And as much as I want to hate on the fact that he was a YouTuber, goes and tries to become a boxer, obviously isn't good at that, and now tries to become a WWE wrestler. I think a lot of people wanted to hate on it, but he's putting in the work, and he's doing great things with that. And I thought this match was terrific. There were some shenanigans, and I learned myself who iShow Speed was, or I learned that I'm old because I didn't know who iShow Speed is. And that's just the nature of getting older, folks. I don't know who these people are sometimes. Great, obviously a great spot with Randy Orton. Randy's the perfect guy for that because Randy, grizzled veteran, doesn't have time for all this crap. And it was a great match. Logan Paul, though, retains, and I think that they're doing a great, great job of legitimizing him and by extension legitimizing the U.S. title. And that's one thing that's been a theme here under Triple H, legitimizing all of the championships. And that's why the splitting of the tag team championships, I think, is a great, great thing because now, again, you're going to allow so many people to go for it. People are going to want it. Awesome. So I thought this match did great. Right before the main event, we had Bayley and Io Sky, and this was just Bayley getting her WrestleMania moment. And I want to say this about Bayley because I know a lot of people have been watching for a long time, and a lot of people, I think, have taken Bayley for granted. Let's not forget that Bayley's been around a long time, almost a decade. She had one of the greatest matches I've ever seen against Sasha Banks when she was in NXT, and then she held up really the company in a lot of ways during the pandemic when there were no fans. And then when there were screens for fans, Bayley turned heel during that time period or right before that time period and really honed her character during that time. All the work she did with Sasha Banks, the title defenses that she had, it was great. And she's never really had that moment on the grandest stage by herself. She's always been part of a multi-woman match or a tag match or something. And this was really, really awesome. The crowd loves her. She has just worked her ass off to be here. And I think one of the aspects about Bayley that is true is that a lot of people are going to take her for granted right now because she's been consistently great. When you have a player on a team of any type and they're consistent, they're great, you kind of take them for granted because you just assume that they're going to show up. Bayley shows up and shows out all the time. And to me, this was her reward. So it was a great entrance for her, a great match, a great story that they told. A straight up wrestling match, Damage Control did not get involved. And Bayley gets a clean win. And I think that's the best. She seems to me like an all-around great person. Everybody seems to love her in the locker room. I mean, if CM Punk loves her, guess what? That means she's a great person. So it's a great moment. And now we get to the final main event of night two. And Cody Rhodes finishes the story, as we have been hearing for years now, and defeats Roman Reigns for the Universal Heavyweight Championship. This whole match to me was cathartic. And I don't use that word very often, but that word is very powerful to me because when I feel that way about something, it means that some sort of demon has been exorcised or some sort of feeling or time period have sort of been closed out in some finite kind of way. And this match to me really accomplished so many things. It legitimately made Roman Reigns look like the star that he is. It crowned Cody as the leader of this new era. And in my opinion, it also gave us what could possibly be the greatest 5 to 10 minutes of professional wrestling ever in that last sequence. And so it was Bloodline Rules heading in. A lot of great stuff during the one-on-one with Cody and with Roman. Roman using the crossroads, making fun of it because it's a crappy move. You know, things like that. I love those callbacks. I love those little things that happen in the course of a match that help to tell a story. And when they call back stories that have been told previously, if you've been watching long enough, man, that's a great feeling. And you just knew at some point, obviously, that people were going to interfere. So here comes Jimmy Uso to interfere, breaks up a crossroads. Jay comes in, spears him off of the ramp. So to me, that says that that feud is going to continue. And I knew in my mind, here comes Solo Sikoa. And this is where things got great, because Solo obviously comes in, Samoan Spike with a spear. Two kickouts by Cody Rhodes. It makes you feel endearing to him. And you're like, man, this is great. And then John Cena's music hits. And when I say that it's cathartic, I mean, John Cena, like him or not, was the symbol for an entire generation. And he was a great champion. No matter what you felt about his wrestling skills and whether you thought that he was the Hogan of today, it was awesome. He was awesome. And coming in and in storyline, taking out the guy who took him out the last time we saw John Cena in a wrestling ring. I thought that was great. So Cena comes in, cleans house. The pop for when he did the attitude adjustment on Roman Reigns was terrific. And you knew there was going to be a response to that. And the response is the final boss, and that's The Rock. This was so great because, and I had forgotten about it in the moment, but it called back to their WrestleMania history. And that WrestleMania history was complicated because at the time it was icon versus icon, once in a lifetime. And then they kind of force-fed The Rock as a champion and that neutered CM Punk as a champion. And Cena wins against The Rock, and they give him kind of that passing of the torch moment that at this point he didn't really need because he had been so consistently great for so long. Beating The Rock, to me, didn't do anything for him. So The Rock comes down. They have a great stare down in the ring. And that's one thing that professional wrestling does that nothing else does. That stare down, the crowd's going nuts. It builds tension in a way that no real sport could actually build, in my opinion. Maybe baseball, when you have the bases loaded and you're in the bottom of the ninth and you could get a walk-off home run or a walk-off hit. But to me, I feel like this stare down, the crowd's going nuts. And then obviously, it's going to break down. Cena goes for a punch, rock bottom, and The Rock tells him to get out, goes and gets the weight belt. And this is where the story beat of all story beats comes in, and you hear the Shield music. Now, that to me was one of the greatest factions of all time, certainly one of the greatest trios of all time. And obviously, to me, there's Demolition, the Fabulous Freebirds, of course, which is one of the things that this podcast is named after. And then, of course, you have the Shield and some of the just greatest tag matches that they ever had. The way that all that broke up, one of the greatest heel turns of all time. And in comes Seth Rollins in Shield gear with a steel chair. He doesn't get the chance to do anything. He gets taken out by Roman when he's going to take out The Rock. And so there is Seth Rollins laying there in his Shield gear, a ridiculous callback. It's like deja vu almost. And then The Rock standing there, trash talking Seth Rollins, trash talking Cody Rhodes. And this is the moment where I thought we were going to hear the glass break. We don't. Instead, we hear the gong. The lights go out, and the lights come back on, and here's The Undertaker, and he chokeslams The Rock. Lights go back off, and everything is clear. And yes, this is the spot that would have made a lot of sense for Stone Cold Steve Austin, because had the glass broke, that place would have just blown up. But The Undertaker, in retrospect, is a better place for that, because The Undertaker was WrestleMania. The streak, which is now over, of course, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, two guys that were managed by Paul Heyman, both beat The Undertaker on the biggest stage. But The Undertaker and WrestleMania are synonymous with each other. They will always be linked to each other. And that streak should have stayed alive. It's one of the greatest feats in professional wrestling. Amazing that they let it go that long. And there were a lot of great matches at the end of that streak, man. Just a lot. And so if anybody is going to preserve wrestling, if anybody is going to preserve WrestleMania, The Undertaker makes so much sense. And so The Undertaker cleans house, and now we are left here at the end. And Roman Reigns is the last person standing. And this is when I said Seth Rollins coming in was the best story beat. This is where it was like the chef's kiss of everything that could have happened. Roman Reigns picks up that steel chair, can just absolutely wallop Cody Rhodes, retain his title, walk back, continue this historic reign that he's had. Instead, though, he thinks back to 10 years ago when Seth Rollins hit him with that chair. I said it was one of the greatest heel turns of all time, and this was a 10-year-old story beat that they went back to. Roman Reigns never, ever forgave him. And in all the bloodline stuff where you have legitimate family ties with all these people that are legitimately related, a guy that Roman Reigns called brother once, who betrayed him in the worst possible way, is there. And Roman Reigns still not feeling like he has exorcised that demon, takes the chance and takes out Seth. And you see a satisfied look on his face. And that's just enough for Cody Rhodes to recover and just enough for him to hit three crossroads. And the story is finished. Cody Rhodes is your new Universal Champion. So many things were wrapped up here. Obviously, three or four different eras with The Undertaker representing so many of them. But the thing that stuck out to me the most was the celebration after the fact. Samantha Irvin's voice cracking, legitimately feeling happy, tears of joy as she's announcing Cody Rhodes' win. Having all the family members, all the wrestlers, it was a great callback to WrestleMania 10 when all the wrestlers came in, celebrated with Bret Hart. And even at the time, Vince McMahon, who was a commentator back then, said this is the dawning of a brand new era. And that's the words or the phrase that Triple H used on night one when he talked about what this WrestleMania meant. And this felt like that, openly celebrating. But here's the thing, though. Cody Rhodes cuts a promo while the main feed is still on and breaks the fourth wall, calls down Triple H, calls down Bruce Pritchard. His mom is in the ring talking about all these things. And to me, all of this was a direct moving on from Vince McMahon, that everything that has happened over the last 6 months, and you loop in Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame speech, which was terrific, WWE is specifically moving on culturally from Vince McMahon. And this represented all of that in a main event. It had all the good feels, and you want to go home feeling great after a WrestleMania of this magnitude. WrestleMania 10, WrestleMania 20, 30, and 40 have all provided a great feel-good moment going home. And that's what you want. And I've thought about it a lot lately, and I feel like it was one of the greatest WrestleMania moments ever. That last 10 minutes is what makes pro wrestling so awesome. It makes you feel that the future is bright. It makes you trust WWE creative. And it also elevates the product. It makes the product feel even more legitimate than it is. When people are flocking to these events, and we're talking about breaking gate records and all these things, now, of course, WWE is going to cook the books in a certain way because they want the publicity. But to me, this just, it made the product amazing. And it's invigorated a lot of people like myself. That's why we're here talking about it. So overall, I feel like it was enjoyable. Where does it rank overall? I don't know. It's a little too early for that. I know that in my mind, I have WrestleMania 17, WrestleMania 30, WrestleMania 10 up there in my top three in some order. I think I've always felt very strongly about WrestleMania 17 being amazing. And it's true. It was. But man, this was great. And top 10, top 7, maybe somewhere. One day, I will go back and rewatch it and I will let you know. But I really, really enjoyed it. The future is bright. It really is bright. And I loved every minute of it. So that was WrestleMania. So since we're a little bit late and we're recording this on a Thursday, let's talk about the Raw after WrestleMania. So the Raw after WrestleMania has always been a spectacle. It's become something that kind of has this sort of lore to it. But over the last few years, it's sort of fallen off because the booking has been just weird. We have come to get used to great crowds, which Philadelphia was awesome tonight, and surprises and just great segments. So the Raw after WrestleMania to me in this new era was intriguing because what is it going to set up for the future? And that's really what I was looking forward to, because now we're moving on from Roman Reigns, seemingly moving on from The Rock, I think, because The Rock is going to go film at least a movie or two. And so Cody Rhodes is going to get his moment in the sun. So it opens, obviously, tons of hype throughout the entire episode about WrestleMania, greatest WrestleMania of all time, all that good stuff. Cody comes out and does his Cody thing. Now, Cody is about as pure a babyface as you can get. And so his shtick, in my opinion, is not as awesome as I think a lot of others are. And sometimes it can get a little, what's the word people use, saccharine. But it was fine. I thought Triple H coming out there to talk to him and be legitimate, again, breaking the fourth wall in a lot of ways, talking about the history with Dusty and everything, I thought all that was really well and good. And I think it's important because a lot of people today maybe don't care about it, but there's a lot of fans like myself who do remember Dusty Rhodes, do remember the way that he was treated in WWF long back in the day. And so I thought it was great. And you knew throughout this whole thing, he's going to say, I'm a fighting champion, blah, 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 blah. But you were kind of wondering what was going to happen. So then The Rock's music hit. Now, this segment was far, far too long for my liking. I think it was like 45 minutes. And so that's my only complaint about The Rock is The Rock has got to get his time. And Dwayne Johnson, to me, seems like a great guy, obviously, tons of charity and everything. But I feel like he's a guy who loves himself a little bit. And I think that he loves The Rock character and loves the fact that the fans love The Rock. So he got a lot of time. And there was some awkwardness, obviously, with the holding of championship belts and such. But really what it came down to was The Rock saying, I'll be back. And when I come back, I'm coming after you, champion or no champion. That's the intrigue. And then, of course, the segment ends with The Rock handing Cody Rhodes something. We don't know what it was, saying, don't ever break my heart again if you smell what the final boss is cooking. So this is setting up for the future. What did he hand him? I don't know. It probably will be something like Shane McMahon's lockbox. We won't actually ever know. But the point is that Cody is now, he has to look behind because he's going to be defending that championship a lot. But it doesn't matter whether he has it or not. The Rock will be coming for him. And that was the big takeaway there. I thought that was great. I personally believe that it's setting up a WrestleMania 41 main event. But we'll see. Two things that I thought were really great. Both NXT champions, the men and the women, were represented on this show. And those are the only two surprises in my opinion. So you had Ilja Dragunov, which I thought was a great match against Nakamura. Now, Nakamura is a guy who I feel like is kind of bulletproof at this point. He is there. He's not going to be a main player. Solid match. Great guy. Great worker. Going to make guys look like $1 million. And Dragunov looked really, really good. To me, this is a sign that his time in NXT will be up and he'll be moving up. And you have Bron Breakker up there already. So a really great young crop. And of course, you had Roxanne Perez, who came in and essentially squashed Indy Hartwell. And that really wasn't what it was about, in my opinion. I mean, she obviously looks like $1 million. Probably going to see her soon. But the whole Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell thing is great because you're setting up a feud that doesn't include a title. And the women need a little bit of that. I think the women need a little bit more time and a little bit of... They need some feuds that are going to allow them to soar a little bit more than just who's in the title picture. So I thought all of that was very well done. It was nice to see them treated well. In the past, NXT people have come up and, man, they've taken that L because Vince felt like, hey, you have to earn your stripes. And so it was always weird to me to have a person come up being a champion in the other one and then get embarrassed over here. Like Karrion Kross was that guy, champion, great run in NXT. And then they embarrassed him. They made him look like a total fool, total idiot. So I think it was great the way they were presented. You had a 6-man tag match. Now, if I had a beef about this, it's the fact that this was supposed to be Damian Priest's moment. Yes, he's a heel. Got the You Deserve It chance, of course. But it was really secondary. And the 6-man tag match was what took place. John Cena being a part of it was a great moment for R-Truth, great moment for the fans. But at the end of it, I felt like Damian Priest kind of looked like a chump. And so I hope that they kind of right that wrong going forward because he should be shown as legitimate. The Judgment Day are still very, very powerful, still very, very much in play. So let's hope that they right that wrong. But overall, it's a nice little moment. Sami Zayn obviously comes out as the Intercontinental Champion. Cuts a really nice promo, talking about the people that helped him and everything. And as he's about to talk about Chad Gable, he's interrupted by Giovanni Vinci and Ludwig Kaiser. And of course, that makes a lot of sense. They're going to come up and stand up for Gunther, who's not coming out himself. Easy tag match there. Chad Gable comes down for the save. And so we come back from commercial and here we are. And that's the match that got the most time. Chad Gable is a lot of fun to watch. Very Kurt Angle-y. And I know that that's an easy comparison, but he's Kurt Angle-y in the sense that he's funny. Can also turn it on. Great technical wrestler. Sami Zayn, of course, is a hero wherever he goes. And I like that story between the two of them because now Chad Gable's going to get a chance at the Intercontinental title. It seems like Sami Zayn is moving on from Gunther, moving on from that stable Imperium. Gunther has got to be on to bigger and better things, I would think, like Damian Priest or even Cody Rhodes. So I think that that makes a lot of sense. I'm intrigued, though, because I feel like Chad Gable is going to turn on him because Sami is a great guy and is a great champion, but I think he might undersell some of these people. And you think he wouldn't because he's dealt with Kevin Owens for so long, but you think that he would. So it'll be interesting to see if Chad Gable is straight babyface here, and because he's not going to get the win right away. I feel like that's going to frustrate him and we're going to see a heel turn. And that could actually be a whole lot of fun. Jade Cargill comes in, squashes Chelsea Green. Perfect for that. Honestly, Chelsea Green is funny to me. Her character's funny, and she's a perfect person to have Jade Cargill squash. Now, I will say this, though, is with wrestlers and performers like Jade Cargill who come in and they want to look dominant, a lot of times they do the squash match too often. And so if they're going for a Goldberg-like streak here, I think it's great because you want to protect her. She's still very, very green. She's going to learn a lot in WWE, but just be careful with that is all I would say. But she looks like a star. Her rollout has been terrific. The fans love her, and that's how you do a rollout. Vince could learn a thing or two from Triple H, I think. I think that's obvious. Jey Uso becomes the number one contender. That's how the show ends. Now, a part of this, of course, is you have some great talent here. Bronson Reed wins the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which used to mean something at least once or twice. It doesn't really mean a whole lot now. Ricochet, who's on a terrific trend. Drew McIntyre, and of course, you have Jey Uso. Now, I would have thought this was a great opportunity for Ricochet to be rewarded for how white hot he has been lately, but I get it. CM Punk interferes, costs Drew the match. Jey Uso, who they're calling main event Jey Uso, so give him that title shot. He's not going to win it, but it gives him a chance to be elevated, and you can elevate Ricochet further down the road, maybe. It's fine. I mean, Jey Uso is very over with the crowd, but coming off that stinker with his brother, you got to think his brother is going to interfere here. So I'm just, again, trusting the process here. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good show. There was a lot of future storylines, and that's really what's important. That's the takeaway here is this is the new era. So WrestleMania is a great feel-good moment, obviously, but it's the future. It's about what's going to happen next, and they set that up really, really well here. Some quality matches, some quality promos, some intrigue, and that's what you can kind of are hoping for, right? You want them to be careful, and you want them to take care with these storylines. And I think that's what it did. It wasn't the flashiest Raw after WrestleMania, but the crowd was awesome throughout. They were great in not letting The Rock talk, and I think The Rock played into that a little bit too much, but the crowd was terrific. It was a hot crowd, some holy crap moments. I love the way that the NXT champions were portrayed. They're setting up a lot of intrigue with Chad Gable, Sami Zayn. Like, there's a lot to look forward to, and that's all. So this was the first episode of Freebird Rules, and of course, we had a lot to get into. And obviously, at this point, when it comes out, it's technically old news, but we're going to try to get into a cadence here. But I just love talking professional wrestling. So if you are in that boat and you want to get in touch with me or connect with me in any way, email MattyIceMedia@gmail.com is the email that I use for this show. And we have the Matty Ice Media Network up here, MattyIceMedia.com, where we have access to all the other podcasts that we have, like the ones I've mentioned before. And if you want to connect with me personally, you can find me on Twitter or X at Matty Ice Freights is the handle. And I've had a blast doing this. I hope that you have too. Let me know what you think of WrestleMania. Let me know what you think of the future and of the new era. Hit me up where I told you to hit me up. I'd love to hear from you, connect, share, all that good stuff. Hope this finds everybody well. Hope this finds everybody safe. We'll be back next week to talk SmackDown this week, Raw next week as we're getting rolling with this. Hope everybody has a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you next time. This is Freebird Rules. Yeah. Let's go. We just gotta go hard. I go the hardest. I bring the pain. Not what you used to. It's all part of the game. Yeah. Oh yeah, the beast back. Adrenaline pumping through my veins. Can't relax. Original. I am not the same as these cats. I sting them if they never ever mind in they beeswax. I don't ever cap, but I'm wearing like 3 hats. Never been a rat, but I know where the cheese at. You'll never get a trophy, cause they all here where we at. You better believe that when it's all said.